This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Today we continue our Where We Vote series with a look at the race for mayor of Hartford. Pedro Segarra was on our show recently defending his record and criticizing his opponent, Luke Bronin, who is our guest today. Bronin claimed the city's Democratic endorsement and has a commanding fundraising lead. He's recently held a job in the governor's office, and he's also served in Afghanistan and in the U.S. Treasury Department. We'll find out more about his plans for the capital city, and we'll take your questions, too. Join our conversation, 860-275-7266. Comment on our website, wnpr.org/where we live. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. If you go to wnpr.org and check out the drop-down for Where We Live, you can find our interview with Pedro Segarra. And, of course, we're just 6 days away from the Democratic primary. Luke Bronin's good enough to come in and join us in studio today. Luke Bronin, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me.
Why are you running for mayor?
I'm running for mayor because I really believe this city is at a critical moment. You know, I think there is momentum, particularly in the downtown, where the state has made a tremendous commitment, a tremendous investment in getting residential building done, Front Street, UConn. But I think we are at a moment where too much of our city doesn't feel like they're sharing in Hartford's rise, and where we have some real structural problems that we need to tackle head on. And we've got big challenges, whether it's dealing with public safety, strengthening our neighborhood schools, and growing jobs for Hartford residents. And as I've watched over the last few years, I've been frustrated with what I think is a lack of leadership and a lack of sense of urgency.
You came to the city about 9 years ago?
Yeah, we first moved here in 2006.
Why'd you move to Hartford?
My wife got a job as a law professor at UConn Law School in the West End, and so we moved up and fell in love with the city.
A lot of people who get a job at UConn Law School or get a job at the Hartford or get a job somewhere else downtown, they decide to go live in the suburbs. Why did you decide to live in the city?
Because we think Hartford is an exciting place with unbelievable possibility, and we made a very conscious decision that we've never regretted to make Hartford our home and to decide to be here for the long term and raise our family here.
What did you do for Governor Daniel Malloy in his office?
I was his general counsel, so his chief legal counsel.
So give me a sense of what that is. I mean, how often do you talk to the governor? What sort of decisions were you in the middle of on a day-to-day basis?
We talk to the governor every day, multiple times a day, and involved in the full range of issues that come through the governor's office. You know, obviously very involved in any issue that had a clearly legal dimension, involved in advising the governor on judicial appointments. And we made some, I think, tremendous appointments to the bench, a really diverse group of appointments. And also involved in negotiating legislation, you know, very involved in the legislative process, both in advance of the legislative session when the governor is laying out his agenda, and then during the legislative process when you're negotiating those bills as they go through.
As you can probably imagine, an awful lot of our conversation today is going to be about the back and forth that you've had with the incumbent mayor, Pedro Segarra, in the press and in various places. We're actually going to play a little bit of tape from when Pedro Segarra was on our show recently. Here he is talking a little bit about what you did while you were in the governor's office.
He basically didn't do much while he was in that job to really, really help our city, number one. Outside of that job, very little contributions to the city in terms of active participation. Most of his effort that he expended in our community, and most of the effort actually that he expended while he was at the governor's office, was expended on lining himself up for a mayoral run, not in terms of actually contributing anything significant to our community that would really make him appreciated in terms of what he had donated to our city or produced for our city. So that's what I'm talking about.
And that's in response, that's Pedro Segarra on the show a couple of weeks ago. That's in response to my asking questions about essentially, why is he making such a big deal about where you come from, how long you've been in the city? I mean, how do you respond to the mayor there?
Well, look, I think the mayor has gotten to a point where he's saying just about anything in this race, and there are 6 days to go, so I guess I'll just get used to it. But look, my charge as the governor's general counsel was not to focus specifically on Hartford. It was statewide. And yet, there were a number of issues that had, I think, a profound impact. Effect here in Hartford where I played a real role. You know, one of them being the Second Chance Society legislation. That was something that I was deeply involved in designing and advocating for, and was very proud to see that pass and be enacted this past year. Was part of the team that designed and outlined the gun control measures that were passed in 2013. Was really strongly behind the push to try to end veterans' homelessness in the state of Connecticut, including for those homeless veterans here in Hartford, setting an ambitious goal of trying to end veterans' homelessness, chronic homelessness for veterans, by the end of 2015. And, you know, the federal government just declared Connecticut the first state to have achieved that milestone. And to me, that's about setting bold targets, going after them aggressively, and achieving something, using government to achieve something. We also raised the minimum wage while I was there. I also helped push through what was an unprecedented use of resources under the Chef lawsuit to support a neighborhood school in Hartford. Through the Lighthouse School Program, resources went from the Chef settlement to support Rawson School in Hartford. And that was unprecedented. And I think some of those measures have a real impact in Hartford. But again, my role was statewide.
So I think one of the things that the mayor is saying there, though, is if you're going to take credit for being part of an administration that did these things statewide that you're talking about, you probably would take some of the blame in his mind for the city not getting some of the resources that he has felt that it needed. You've been critical of the mayor's ability to get state funding. Doesn't some of that have to fall on the administration, knowing that Hartford is a city that needs some help in education, in public safety, in infrastructure? Could the governor's office have been doing more for Hartford?
Well, look, you know, on the issue of resources for public safety, one of the problems here is the mayor has misrepresented the amount of assistance that the city has gotten. And there are a couple of news stations that have done reports on that and shown that the numbers he's using just aren't accurate. But the other thing is, it's up to a mayor to advocate. It's up to a mayor to say, we have a problem, we're in need of resources, and to articulate how those resources are going to be used. And that's a mayor's job. That's what mayors do all over the state and all over the country. And we didn't see this mayor going in to do that. And so it really rests on the mayor's shoulders to make that initial ask and say, we have a problem, we have a challenge, we're falling short, and here's exactly how it's going to be used. And then you've got to build that coalition of Hartford legislative delegation and then statewide and really advocate aggressively. And we haven't seen that kind of aggressive advocacy.
Do you feel like you could have had more of an influence while in the governor's office to help out the city of Hartford?
No, I think I did an awful lot while I was in the governor's office. Among other things, just to be an open door. You know, I had I was in contact with residents and advocates and officials from the city of Hartford, just as I was in contact with officials and residents from cities and towns all over the state of Connecticut. But my approach as the governor's general counsel is the same as my approach will be as mayor, which is to have an open door, to always be a straight shooter, and if I can't help out with something, to make it clear that I can't help out, but to try to solve problems.
Talk about where you grew up.
So first 10 years in Rye, New York, then moved to Greenwich, then was in college in New Haven and law school, so in New Haven for the better part of 10 years, and then we moved to Hartford in 2006.
The fact that you are originally from Greenwich has come up repeatedly in this race. And honestly, I'll just say I'm not one who believes that there's some sort of litmus test at all for how long you need to be in a place before you want to get actively involved in politics, right? Sometimes people show up a place, they say they want to do something, and they start in. One of the reasons I think it's interesting, though, is because I think you know this, certainly working in the governor's office, that if there are two poles of the state, Greenwich seemingly is at one and Hartford is at the other. Greenwich is the nearest to New York City. It's the richest community in the state. Many people I've talked to in Greenwich feel that their hard-earned tax dollars go to support things in Hartford that are distant from them, and many people in Hartford feel as though the people in Greenwich are disconnected. How does your experience growing up in Greenwich help or hurt your ability to make decisions about what to do with the city of Hartford? I mean, are you sufficiently clued into what life in Hartford is like?
Yeah, look, my wife and I moved here 9 years ago, and I've spent a lot of time over those years getting to know Hartford, getting to know my fellow Hartford residents, getting to know our neighborhoods, getting to know the beautiful cultural diversity that we have, and also the incredibly deep challenges that we have. You know, there are probably not two more different places than Greenwich and Hartford. And yet we chose Hartford because we believe in Hartford. We believe in everything it has to offer. And I also believe it's a place that is in desperate need of stronger leadership to make sure that we're doing everything we can to give kids who are growing up in Hartford the opportunity to use their talents to the fullest, to get a good education, to get that job training that's going to prepare them for success. Make sure that they can grow up in neighborhoods that are safe. You know, make sure that the kids and their parents have the opportunity to get jobs when they want to work. And thousands of Hartford residents desperately want to work and can't find jobs. So, you know, my experience throughout my life, whether it's in federal government, in state government, in the U.S. military, has been about service. It's been about trying to hold people accountable and being willing to be held accountable. And that's the kind of leadership that I think is going to make a difference here in Hartford.
What did you do in the military? Explain a little bit about your work there.
I'm a Navy reservist, a Navy intel officer, and I did a deployment to Afghanistan in 2010, part of 2011. I was on an anti-corruption task force that General Petraeus had set up, and I did a lot of work engaging with Afghan civil society, with Afghan government, Afghan military, trying to tackle the problem of corruption. You know, and our mission, as we saw it, was to try to create the room for a political settlement that would be worthy of the sacrifices that so many men and women, American men and women, and others had made in Afghanistan. I can't say that we solved that problem.
Yeah.
You know, I'm deeply pessimistic about the situation over there. But it was a mission that I believed in and was proud to be part of.
Did you learn anything about corruption there that maybe you can apply to looking at corruption in cities like Hartford, Bridgeport, Waterbury, places where, frankly, we've had problems over the years with corruption?
Well, I learned how corrosive it can be, how dangerous it can be, how much it can undermine everything positive in a government, and how little tolerance anybody should have for it.
Given all of that, do you think it's fair to say that this current mayor inherited some real problems from the previous mayor, who indeed was convicted on corruption charges? I mean, Pedro Segarra took over from Eddie Perez at a time when the city had gone through a real trying time because of those corruption trials. Do you think it's fair to say that this mayor helped to stabilize a city that was in trouble because of what the previous mayor had done?
Look, I think to the extent he played a transitional role in that time 5 years ago, I do give him credit. But that was 5 years ago, and we've had 5 years since then to tackle some of the structural problems that we've got. For example, you know, we've got a huge fiscal crisis in this city. We're facing a persistent budget deficit, but we've dealt with that by selling off city assets. That's one-time revenue. Last year, we sold off another city parking garage, but we kept the debt on it. That's like selling your house and keeping the mortgage. It's just not sustainable. And at the same time we did that, the city raided the long-term education funds, the long-term employee benefit reserves that had been set aside by the Board of Education. Not sustainable. And that's why Moody's downgraded the city for the third time during the mayor's time.
How do you fix that budget deficit? I mean, what are some levers you can pull as mayor that perhaps this mayor hasn't?
Well, look, first, we've got to be better stewards of our own resources. You know, we can't cut our way all the way through that deficit, but we can spend money more wisely than we do. You know, it's not helpful when the city of Hartford hires back a high-level official. The day after she retires, hires her back as a contract worker, making more money for part-time work than she had for full-time work. It's not helpful when, you know, audit reports reveal that the city has lost track of tens of millions of dollars of loans. We spend an enormous amount of money on planning and on consultants whose reports sit on the shelf and gather dust without action. You know, we have city services that are duplicated across the Board of Ed and the city side, and I think that there are some efficiencies to be found there. So it starts with getting our own house in order. The next piece is what we talked a little bit about earlier, and that's being better advocates for the city at the state capitol. You know, the city of Hartford has half of its property non-taxable, and we've got a pretty small property tax base to begin with. We need to be working hard in partnership with our legislative delegation in advance of the legislative session to make the case for a more sensible reimbursement system, payments in lieu of taxes that the state pays to the city of Hartford. Now, cities in Connecticut have been banging their head against that, you know, pilot wall.
And the state's not flush with money right now. It's not like you're going to go to the state and say, well, you know, with the big budget deficits you're running, all of a sudden we need more money for Hartford. I mean, how exactly do you do that?
That's right. But some of it is about changing the formula in ways that distribute the funds more equitably. For example, here's a small example. Under the current formula, state property gets reimbursed at the lowest rate of all non-taxable property. And, of course, in the city of Hartford, we have a high concentration mm-hmm. of state property. I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that the capital city, which does the state a service by hosting so much of state government, should be reimbursed at an equal level for that state property. I think that's a modest ask, but it's one should be, we should be making aggressively.
Do you think that that's something – I mean, given the fact that you do have a legislative delegation here in the city, but the delegation outside the city in the suburbs is very, very strong indeed and may be resistant to a plan like that. I mean, do you have hopes that you would be able to work with lawmakers to get something like that done?
Well, absolutely I have hopes. We also have a Senate president and a Speaker of the House who have shown a real openness to a serious discussion about pilot reform, payment in lieu of taxes reform. And we have a very strong and well-placed legislative delegation from the city of Hartford. And so I think if we all work together with that common priority, that we can get a lot done.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get some of your phone calls at 860-275-7266. We're talking with Luke Bronin. He's the endorsed Democrat. He's running for mayor of Hartford. We are just less than a week away now from this election, this primary election. If you want more information, you can go to WNPR.org/where we live. You can also find our recent interview with incumbent Mayor Pedro Segarra. We'll be right back, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. It's our Where We Vote series. We're just a few days away from the primary, not only in Hartford, but in other cities around the state. The one we're focusing on today, though, is the capital city. Luke Bronin is the endorsed Democrat running for mayor of Hartford. If you want to hear our interview with Pedro Segarra, the incumbent mayor, you can go to WNPR.org/where we live. Luke Bronin joins us today to answer some questions. We'll get to some of your questions in just a moment. I want to ask a little bit about fundraising. You've taken a commanding lead in fundraising over Pedro Segarra, raising over $800,000 for your campaign. It's becoming a very expensive campaign for mayor. One thing is a lot of your money isn't coming from the city. It's coming from all over the place. It's coming from different states. It's coming from around Connecticut. I mean, what should it say to voters that so much of your support is coming from outside the city?
Well, look, first of all, let's start by saying the same is true for Pedro Segarra. You know, he's raised hundreds of thousands of dollars, about $400,000. 85% of that money for Pedro Segarra is coming from outside the city of Hartford as well. As a candidate, you try to earn support from wherever you can to run as strong a campaign as you can. And I've been proud, first of all, that as a challenger, I've had more residents from the city of Hartford contribute to my campaign than the incumbent mayor has. In some ways, those contributions that I'm most proud of are those city residents who are, you know, sending $10, $20 because they believe in the message, they believe in change. As I've gone out to fundraise beyond Hartford, what I've been talking about is my vision for Hartford. You know, the fact that this is a city with an unbelievable history, with incredibly rich diversity, with a great foundation of arts and culture, and yet which faces huge challenges, and which is one of the poorest cities in the country, and which has neighborhoods that are struggling with Great Depression-level unemployment. And as I've talked about the challenges that we face here, I think there are a lot of people around the state and around the country who decide that they should care about a city like Hartford that's facing those kinds of challenges.
We just got a tweet from Miles who asks, if elected, what plans, if any, do you have for the downtown UConn campus?
Well, I think the plans that have been put together are great ones. You know, I think the design that I've seen looks really good. I'm excited about the prospect of connecting Front Street to Main Street and to the heart of downtown. And I think what we really need to do is just make sure that as UConn comes down there, we do everything we can to continue the momentum, continue the energy, and try to get a virtuous circle going where you get more feet on the street leading to some more cafes or retail and try to get a more vibrant city center.
In a little bit, we're going to talk about the big ballpark plan, something that we've spent a lot of time on the program talking about, a minor league ballpark coming to the north end of town. I will just say, though, I mean, you mentioned earlier that the state has invested quite a bit in downtown. There's new housing going up. As you just said, this UConn campus coming downtown, you like the plans for it. It seems like something that's working out. We'll talk about the ballpark plan a little bit, but in essence, it's going to be the centerpiece of a development that's really, I mean, it was a vacant series of lots for dozens of years, decades, really. Shouldn't Pedro Segarra get some credit for all that? I mean, he helped to bring the UConn campus downtown. He helped to work with the state to get some of this new development downtown. He worked to get a ballpark project there. I mean, didn't he do some of that?
Well, let's separate out the ballpark from the other stuff. The first things you were talking about,
yeah,
the UConn coming downtown, Front Street, the residential developments, those were fully state initiatives, state-financed state initiatives. And in some of those cases, I think actually the progress was made more despite city government than because of city government. You know, I think the mayor's office's primary contribution to the UConn issue was objecting to the site that was chosen. So I'm not sure that there's an enormous amount of credit that that is due to Mayor Segarra for the state's investment in those three things. On the ballpark, that is absolutely Pedro Segarra's initiative, and I have some concerns about it. You know, I'm looking forward to taking my kids to yard goat games. I'm going to do everything I can to make it a success, but I have always had concerns about the numbers. You know, I think the revenue projections, I believe, were high. The costs may have been understated. We've already seen that we're beginning to see cost overruns already. And I'm going to do everything I can to make it work, but I do think that there are some challenges there.
And we'll talk a bit more about that in a moment. Talk about that balance, though, if you would, about state involvement in Hartford versus city initiatives in Hartford, because obviously you want to make sure you bring in state money and bring in resources from the outside if necessary. But if you look at Front Street, I mean, Front Street, right across the street from it is the Connecticut Convention Center and the big Science Center. I mean, a lot of that goes all the way back to the Roland administration. How it got there is maybe another question for another day. But in essence, you've seen a lot of the development that has happened in Hartford be state-directed. If you're mayor, I mean, what do you want that balance to be? Do you want the state coming in saying, no, look, we're going to do this, and it doesn't really matter what you think?
What I want to do is have an ongoing conversation with the state so that we can do as much as possible in partnership so that the city can shape how that investment comes into the city. You know, one of the things that I'm really excited about is that CRDA's scope has been expanded to cover not just downtown, but parts of the Promise Zone. I think there are real opportunities to get CRDA actively involved there. So I'm looking forward to working with the state in close partnership to try to continue to have their support in Hartford, but also to make sure that the city is focusing on the entire city, on our neighborhoods, on our main avenues, on those old commercial centers, which are key arteries for the city, which used to be real centers of community and commerce, Albany Avenue, Franklin Avenue, North Main, Farmington, Maple. You know, those are places where I think we've really neglected for some time.
We're talking with Luke Bronin, who's running for mayor of Hartford. In a new spot you released yesterday, you addressed the lottery system for Hartford schools. Let's listen to the clip from your piece.
Hartford is being held back by violent crime and neglected neighborhood schools. You shouldn't have to win a lottery to get a good education in Hartford.
And this is a new spot that's going to be running statewide. We're going to talk about some of the violent crime in just a moment. Talk about what you mean by you shouldn't have to win a lottery to get a good education in Hartford.
Well, look, anybody who is familiar with how education works in Hartford knows we have a complicated system. You've got the CREC magnet schools. You've got Hartford Public Magnet Schools. You've got neighborhood schools. And you've got some others. As a parent, the way you go through that process is by entering your kids in a lottery. It's called the choice program, but there's an awful lot of chance involved. It's not just choice. And the lottery process is a hard one to navigate. It's not all that transparent. It's not all that easy to figure out how best to position your kid to get them the best possible option. And there's a lot of frustration out there. We're not going to do away with the lottery, nor should we. But what we need to do is make sure that no matter how you do in the lottery, there's a good educational outcome. And to me, that's about strengthening our neighborhood schools, making sure that we're focused on those schools that are the lowest performing schools that struggle with the challenge of higher percentage of kids with special education needs, higher percentage of English language learners, that we're doing everything we can to support them and make sure that responsibility is broadly shared.
But why aren't we going to get rid of the lottery? I mean, why does that system even work at all? Why does that make sense?
Well, because you can't just the system has been built over the last 10 years, you can't just change course in midstream. Over the long run, I'd love to get rid of the lottery. I should qualify, I guess, say, you know, we're not going to get rid of the lottery overnight. We've built about 40 magnet schools in the Hartford area. The state has spent $1.5 billion doing it. We're not going to roll back the clock on that, nor should we. That's created a lot of opportunities for a lot of kids. But the most urgent priority is strengthening our neighborhood schools so that those kids who don't win a spot in one of those schools in the lottery have the opportunity to get a great education despite losing the lottery.
You put your kids into the lottery, right? Because you live in Hartford, you've got children, and you put your kids in the lottery. And how did that work out? I will just say, I'm just going to say off the top, I don't love talking about where people's kids go to school as again, as sort of a litmus test for things. But given the fact that you've raised these questions about lotteries, and this is something that you've talked about, I think it's important to address. You put your kids in the lottery. You didn't quite get the placement that you wanted. Do I have that right?
Look, we are strong believers in Montessori school, especially for our young kids. Our kids are 6, 4, and 2,
yeah,
almost 2. And we put our 2 older ones in the lottery a couple of years ago. My middle guy got in. My older one did not. We spent a year sending them to 2 different schools, driving them ourselves to 2 different schools in hopes that the sibling preference would get our older daughter in as well. The second year around, she didn't get in again. And, you know, we made the decision as parents that we wanted our kids to be in the same school and we wanted them to be in a Montessori school. And so they're in the Montessori school of Greater Hartford. But to me, that just emphasizes, you know, the experience that so many parents around Hartford have, and so many of those parents don't have the opportunity to make that choice. They are going to send their kids to whatever school they happen to get sent to, and we have an obligation as a city, and particularly as city leadership, to do everything we can to strengthen those neighborhood schools.
I'll ask you in just a moment how to strengthen those neighborhood schools. I should ask, though, if you're elected mayor of Hartford, are you going to enroll your kids in city schools?
Well, if I'm elected mayor of Hartford, I would take office this year. So, you know, my kids will be in the Montessori School of Greater Hartford, and, you know, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Yeah. Do you think that it sends an important message, though, to residents of the city who don't have the choice that you have, that you feel confident enough in the city schools to put your kids into the city school system?
Well, let me start by saying I've made very clear I think our neighborhood schools need to be improved. I think they need to be dramatically improved. I have never said anything other than our neighborhood schools are struggling. They've been neglected, and they need a lot of work, and they need a lot of support. And so, as mayor, yeah, the best way I can serve the entire city of Hartford and all the kids in Hartford is by putting my full weight behind strengthening our neighborhood schools.
So what does that look like? I mean, how do you strengthen the neighborhood schools? Even just talking, the school in the part of the city that your kids would go to, right, that neighborhood school, what would you do?
Well, here are a couple things. As I said before, the neighborhood schools often face a higher percentage of kids with special education needs and a higher percentage of kids who are English language learners. One of the things I would do is work through the CHEF program to make sure that every magnet school is required to offer an English language learner program. One of the barriers for a lot of families whose kids are English language learners is that the magnet schools don't all have English language learner programs, ELL programs. And so it's sort of self-selected out because they're not going to send their kids to a school that doesn't have it. So I want all the magnet schools to have that program so that the responsibility of educating our English language learner kids is shared broadly, and it's not all placed into the neighborhood schools. That's one way we can help. Another way we can help is by working with the state to try to strengthen support for special education needs. You know, I mentioned before the Lighthouse project, the Lighthouse School project, which for the first time ever dedicated some CHEF resources to a neighborhood school in Hartford. I want to expand that effort. I want to see more of the resources that are being spent on a quality integrated education in Hartford being dedicated to our neighborhood schools. And I'm going to do everything I can to try to do that. I also think we need to take a look at the fact that we as a city suspend more kids out of school than any other city in Connecticut by a big margin. The fact that we face a chronic absenteeism problem and we're not dealing with that as effectively as we used to and as effectively as a lot of other cities do. And those are challenges that I think face our neighborhood schools disproportionately.
So when it comes to the quality difference between the neighborhood school and the magnet school, one of the things you addressed certainly is this inequity, right? The magnet schools aren't expected to educate the same population. They don't have the ELL learners. They don't have a lot of the special education students. So what you're saying is you want to spread that out and make it a little bit more equitable. That may indeed change the mix of the magnet schools. What exactly does that do for the public school in the neighborhood? I mean, I want to understand exactly what changes under a Brown administration about the neighborhood public schools where a lot of people who can't win the lottery and just have to send their kid around the street, they're going to send their kids there. What changes for them?
Well, by spreading out that responsibility of educating those kids who have the greatest needs, it puts less of the burden on the neighborhood school. It's very hard in any school environment when you've got a high concentration of kids who have special education needs or who are English language learners, especially when those schools are under-resourced. And so by focusing on those most challenged schools and by focusing on those kids with the greatest needs, I think we're going to be able to do a lot to raise the level of education in those schools.
How much of it is about funding? How much of it is just about not enough money goes to the neighborhood schools?
Some, but not all. I mean, it is a significant thing. I'm going to fight for more resources from the state. I'm going to do everything we can to prioritize. You know, look, this past year, when the city of Hartford was facing another budget crisis, there were not significant cuts made on the city operations side, but there were 78 positions eliminated on the Board of Education side, including dozens of teachers, guidance counselors, social workers. I'm not sure that's the right priority. So as we make tough choices in city government, let's make sure we're not putting all of the burden onto the educational system.
Was that decision – I mean, was that the mayor's decision? That wasn't really
– Mayor serves on the Board of Education. The Board of Education deals with the budget that the mayor presents.
You wouldn't serve on the Board of Education as the mayor has done.
I have said that I will not appoint myself to the Board of Education. I want to get a – the mayor has five appointments to the board. I want to have those five appointments include more parents. Not a single one of the mayor's current appointments to the Board of Education is a parent of kids in the school system. It strikes me as a little ironic that the mayor has criticized me for where I send my kids to school, and yet not a single parent is appointed to the Board of Education by this current mayor. So I want to appoint a board that has a broad range of perspectives, that includes parents, and that shares the vision of improving our neighborhood schools, and I want to work very closely with them.
You had been endorsed by the Hartford Federation of Teachers, but that endorsement was rescinded last month after they requested you return campaign money from charter school advocates. Can you just talk about that a little bit?
Sure. You know, I've said the same things that I'm saying this morning from day one of the campaign, which is that my priority is on our neighborhood schools. And I think a lot of that's about supporting our teachers, partnering with our teachers, and helping them deal with the challenges of educating in our neighborhood schools. The teachers union wanted me to give back contributions to people who have decided they support my campaign for any number of reasons. I'm not comfortable saying that anyone who doesn't share exactly my vision isn't allowed to support my campaign. You know, I don't change my position. I don't change my priorities based on who's supporting me or who's endorsing me. I am clear and consistent about what I think we need to focus on, and I'm not going to demonize others who may disagree.
Do you support the expansion of charter schools?
I have said clearly I don't think we should be building any new schools in the city of Hartford until we have a very clear enrollment plan. You know, one of the problems right now, back to the neighborhood schools, is that a lot of our neighborhood schools are operating under capacity. You know, they've been emptied out so that they're, you know, 60-70% full. That's an inefficient, and it's not good for those schools. So we need to start working as a holistic system. We need to be getting all of the parts of our complicated educational system here in Hartford around the same table and figuring out how changes on one part impact the rest.
Once you get that settled and you have an enrollment plan, do you support the expansion of charter schools in the city?
Not in general, not theoretically, no. I mean, if there's a specific proposal, we'll talk about it. But my priority is on strengthening our neighborhood schools. I've never viewed charter schools as the answer to the systemic problems that our public school system face. I think charter schools are often able to work on a different playing field and not always with the same population of kids. So to me, as we face the challenge of educating all of Hartford's kids as well as they can be educated, I think we need to focusing on the core public school system and the neighborhood schools.
We're talking with Luke Bronin, who's running for mayor of Hartford. It's part of our Where We Vote series. Take some of your calls now at 860-275-7266. Cody is calling from South Windsor. Hello, Cody. Hi, Cody. Are you there? I guess there's no Cody. What we'll do is let's take a break, and when we come back, we still have to talk about the big ballpark plan for the North Meadows of Hartford, or the north end of Hartford, not the North Meadows. We're not developing that yet. We're also going to talk about public safety in the city, which, of course, has been a big issue. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, We're going to be joined by New England Public Radio reporter Henry Epp. He's been taking us for a ride along the proposed Northeast Energy Direct Pipeline through Massachusetts all the way into New Hampshire. We'll be talking about some of the controversy in that state, and we'll also be talking about the pipeline expansion into Connecticut. Hope you can join us for some natural gas conversation tomorrow on Where We Live. Today, we're talking with Luke Bronin as part of our Where We Vote series. He's the endorsed Democrat running for the mayor of Hartford. If you want to go to WNPR.org/Where We Live and hear our interview with incumbent mayor Pedro Segarra, please feel free to do that. There's a lot still to talk to Luke Bronin about, including public safety, which has, of course, become one of the really big issues here. 25 murders so far this year in Hartford. I guess the first question I have is, what exactly do you think a mayor can do to stop violence of the type that we've seen in the city this year?
I laid out a plan of 10 things that I think can be done. I called it the Safe Streets, Strong Neighborhoods Plan. You can find it on my website. There are a number of things that we should be doing right now. Number one, we've got to stabilize our police force. Our police force is down 60 officers over the last few years, with a number more potentially retiring this year. We have to stabilize the force. We have to begin to grow it again. We need to be able to get officers out of their cars, walking the beat, engaging face-to-face, building that relationship of trust. We also need to be dramatically expanding our youth employment and recreation efforts. You know, we have thousands of kids in this city who want the opportunity to earn a paycheck, to have that sense of purpose that comes with a job, and we can be doing more to provide that in partnership with the private sector and in partnership with other foundations. We need to dramatically expand that. You know, I look at the city like Waterbury, just as one small example. They hired teenagers to shovel snow for seniors on snow days this past winter. That was a great idea. But there's no reason it has to just be on snow days. You know, we've got things that can be done all over the city, and we've got an awful lot of young people who are ready and willing to do them. So that's another piece of it. I think we need to be expanding our partnerships with state and federal law enforcement agencies to tackle the problem of illegal guns in the city. I also think we need to get back at some of those issues that we talked about earlier, like the number of suspensions from our schools. When you suspend a kid out of school repeatedly, you put that kid on a path to failure. And so we need to be more creative and more effective in dealing with discipline issues in our schools. I could go on, but instead I'll just refer you to the website, which is lukebronin.com.
Well, one of the things I want to ask you about, actually, is the summer youth employment. And I think, you know, I've certainly heard from a lot of people in the city over the years who say that just giving kids in the city more things to do, positive things to do, that that's very important and appropriate. One thing I will say, though, about just the statistics around this latest spike in violence, the people who by and large are shooting and being shot at are in their 20s and 30s and sometimes their 40s this year. When we had on Chief Rivella recently, he talked about the fact that this is a very different type of violence spike than we had a few years ago when a lot of the people who were shooting each other were 13 and 14 years old. This seems like a different sort of crime. Summer youth employment doesn't necessarily take care of that problem.
Well, first of all, again, there are a number of different parts of the plan, one of which is getting more police out on the street and walking the beat. Another of which is paying more attention to the quality of life issues, making sure that the street lights are on, that the streets are well kept, those things that just change the atmosphere of a neighborhood. And I think that's important as well. But youth employment is not just about the problem in the moment or the problem this summer. It's about fixing a cyclical problem. It's about fixing the problem for the future, because those people who are in their 20s or even their 30s today, not long ago, were in their late teens or early 20s and often without the opportunity to work. The other thing we've got to focus on is second chance society. You know, I mentioned earlier that's something that I was deeply involved in and passionate about. One of the first things that really got me passionate about public policy was teaching GED and writing courses in the New Haven Correctional Center 15, 16 years ago, when I became convinced that our drug policy, our sentencing laws were misguided, that we were putting far too many people, particularly far too many young people of color, behind bars. And a lot of those people are now out, and they are facing almost permanent punishment because they can't get over that hurdle to find a job because of their record. So we've got to be doing what we can from the city side to complement what the state has done to create a second chance society.
Okay. The idea of putting more officers on the streets, obviously getting them out of their cars, and I've talked to, you know, Chief Rivella about this. He says that, you know, more and more city cops are getting out of their cars and they are walking the streets more and more. What does it look like to put more officers on the streets? Does that necessarily correlate to a drop in crime? And isn't that going to cost a whole lot of money that, you know, the city doesn't have?
Well, first of all, we're paying an awful lot of money in overtime right now because the force is small. It's dropped, and we're making up for it in overtime, a significant amount. So better planning may have saved us some money as well. what it looks like, I think, is pretty simple. You get cops who are doing true community policing by being out and walking and building those relationships. That's not to say that isn't happening. And I'm glad to hear the chief say that that's happening more and more. It needs to be happening more and more. But I think it could be happening even more.
What do you think of the chief? Have you spoken with him? What do you think of the job he's done?
I have spoken with him, and I think that he is a chief in a challenging city, and I look forward to sitting down with him and talking with him in detail, knock on wood, if I win the race next week.
Quickly, before we move on from this, the mayor has said that this is part of a nationwide trend, and honestly, he's right. I mean, whether or not the shootings that have happened in Hartford have anything to do with a nationwide trend on a one-on-one basis doesn't really matter. The statistics are there. We see more violent crime in Baltimore and in Milwaukee and in Chicago and places around the country. I mean, how much can the mayor of the city of Hartford do if indeed we have a trend where there is more violence, there are more people with guns in their hands? As I talked about earlier this week on the program, there's a type of contagion around gun violence in America. I mean, what does the mayor of a small city like Hartford really do about that?
Well, first of all, there are cities around the country that are facing similar challenges, but there are a lot of cities around us that are not. Something different is happening in Hartford than is happening in most New England cities. You know, we've seen the same number of murders this year as the city of Boston, which is five times our size. You know, we have not seen the same type of spike in crime in New Haven or in Bridgeport. Bridgeport's up a little bit, but about half of where Hartford is. So something different is happening here. That's point one. The second is, no matter what the causes are, no matter whether it's just in Hartford or it's a nationwide trend, if you're the mayor of Hartford, it's your job to do everything you can to address the problem in Hartford aggressively, with a sense of urgency, talking about the challenges and doing everything you can to tackle it head on.
And you don't think he's done that?
I don't think he's done that.
I want to move, because we've just got a few minutes left, to a big part of the Pedro Segarra legacy, something that the next mayor, whether it's Pedro Segarra or Luke Bronin or anybody else, will have to deal with. The city is building a ballpark just north of I-84. It's going to include a lot of other development around it. Obviously, you have been critical of the way this plan came together. What do you think of the fact that the next mayor will have a new minor league baseball park and a new minor league baseball team there playing north of I-84?
Like I said, I'm going to do everything I can to make it a success. I don't think there's any other responsible choice. But I have concerns about the numbers. I obviously have huge concerns about the process. The process was broken from the start. It was rolled out as a done deal. Not only was it done non-transparently, but it was also very far from a done deal. It was clear that most of the deal had not yet been worked out. So I'm looking forward to getting in there and sitting down with the team on the city side, with the developer, and understanding exactly where things stand. My particular priority is going to be making sure that the rest of that development that was promised around the baseball stadium gets done. Because as this was ultimately sold, it was not just a baseball stadium, but a large-scale private investment around the baseball stadium. And I'm going to be very focused on making sure that's done and making sure it's done in a way that doesn't just create an outer barrier to the North End, but actually serves as a gateway to Albany Avenue, to North Main Street. That, to me, is the opportunity here, and I think a lot depends on how this project is implemented.
The mayor surprised me, certainly, when he sat here a few weeks ago and said that he took this proposal to the governor's office and asked for help from the state. Did you know about this when you were working in the governor's office?
No, I didn't, and I'm not sure that he's accurate.
So you're saying that he didn't bring it to the governor's office, put it down on the table and say, we'd like some support for a ballpark?
I'm not aware of any proposal that was put before the governor's office.
Do you think the state should be helping in developing something like this?
Do I think the state should be helping to take a team that is in a neighboring city and relocate it 15 minutes down the road? Probably not.
Hmm. There's a lot more that we can talk about, but when it comes to like the finances of the city of Hartford, you've spoken about this quite a bit already, but I just want to talk a little bit more about the budget, because the city, as you say, has had to sell off assets. They've had to figure out new ways to make a budget in a city where there's a lot more that needs to be spent on. How do you go about that? I mean, do you have to lay off people at the city of Hartford in order to make the budget balance?
We'll have to see what it looks like this year. You know, they're always going to have to make tough choices, but we'll have to see what it looks like this year.
I mean, what are you looking at? I mean, what are some very specific things you might be looking at for savings to make sure that you're able to do this?
So one of the things I mentioned is some government restructuring. Yeah. There is a government restructuring task force that met. It was supposed to have recommendations last year. It was very delayed in its work. But some of the things I mentioned earlier, like combining finance departments that serve the Board of Education and the city side, strike me as a pretty common sense idea. You know, a city of 125,000 people, I'm not sure we need to duplicate those functions across the two sides of city government. And I think there are other examples as well. I also think we need to be looking for some regional opportunities at cost sharing. You know, a lot of towns around us face similar challenges. We should be building those partnerships, building some pilot programs to see whether we can effectively share some services.
One of the things that's long been true in city politics is that because of the racial dynamics here, you have a large African-American community, you have a large Latino community, which for years was dominated by Puerto Rican members of the community, but there are people from many other parts of the world right now. There's a large Caribbean-American community, and there's a white community as well. Part of what has happened in the city of Hartford is there's been a sort of a racial division. You know, the mayor, if he has a certain number of appointments to a council, he'll make sure that a few from this group and a few from this group and a few from this group balance out the city racially. There's been some talk about race in this race for mayor as well. How do you change some of that? I mean, do you think that longstanding practice is a good way to move forward managing the city, making sure that all the constituent communities have representation? Or do you think that there's a new, different way to do things?
I think the most important way you change that is by serving the entire city, is by being out and communicating with the city, going out and holding town halls in every single neighborhood, being responsive to neighborhood needs, making sure that everybody in the city, no matter where they live, feels like City Hall is paying attention. That's the fundamental way you change that. I do think an administration should broadly reflect the diversity of a city, and I'm going to be looking to create a diverse administration. But ultimately, the most important thing is how is the city serving its residents and serving every community?
Do you feel like you would have to, if you were mayor, do some fence mending within the Latino community, specifically the Puerto Rican community, given some of what has happened during this campaign?
Well, let's be clear when you say some of what has happened. I think the mayor has been irresponsible in the rhetoric that he's used. My wife is Latina. My wife is a proud Latino who was the former president of the Connecticut Hispanic Bar Association. I'm running to be mayor of all of Hartford. I'm running to serve every resident of Hartford. And as I've been out knocking on doors, including in the Latino community, I've sensed the same frustration there as elsewhere, the same sense that City Hall isn't paying attention to neighborhoods, that City Hall is not focused on the priorities that really matter in the city. And those things that I hear are the same in all of our communities in Hartford. So I'm running to be mayor of all of Hartford. I do think it's irresponsible and disappointing that the mayor has chosen to run this campaign as an us versus them campaign.
You brought up your wife. She's been on our program before. She's a chair of planning and zoning at the city, appointed by Mayor Pedro Segarra, which we talked about when he was on. If you are elected mayor, would you ask her to step down from that position?
She's a term appointment. She serves till 2017, so I don't have the power to remove her. And it's an independent commission that she serves on voluntarily, and she is passionate about it and loves the work and is deeply dedicated to it.
Would you feel as though there would be a conflict of interest if she continued to serve to the end of her term if you were mayor of the city of Hartford?
I don't think there's any conflict of interest. Again, this is a volunteer position. And if anybody knows my wife, they know that, you know, and anybody thinks that I could tell my wife what to do, she would just comply, doesn't know my wife.
We've just got about 30 seconds left. So you, like, play music too?
Maybe should be in past tense.
You don't do that anymore?
I play once in a while, but not as much as I used to.
You've like written songs. We were going to queue this up before, but we just didn't have time. You wrote a song that was featured on Dawson's Creek?
It was, briefly. That plan A was country rock. Luckily for a lot of people, plan A didn't work out.
So you decided to move away from that. Luke Rohn, it was good to talk to you. I really appreciate you coming in and spending some time with us. We had a little bit of trouble with our phones. We would have gotten to some more phone calls, and I apologize for that. But you can, of course, continue this conversation at WNPR.org/where we live. Thank you so much. I appreciate
it. Thanks, John. Look forward to coming back.
Of course, if you want to go online to WNPR.org/where we live, you can listen to this interview. In the future, you can also listen to our interview with Pedro Segarra. CTN was here, the cameras of CTN, the Connecticut Network, to tape today's program. Our show is produced by Tucker Ives, Lydia Brown, Betsy Kaplan, and Josh Nalea. Our technical producer is Kion Wolf. Heather Brandon is the digital editor. Where We Live's executive producer is Katie Tolarski. I'm John Dankowski, and this is Where We Live.